Where'd it go?
Could I get a member to read, why are we here?
They've only been reading two.
Hmm?
They've only been reading the first two.
Oh, okay, well, that's good. It works for me, sorry. Thank you for your willingness.
Appreciate your willingness.
All right, so our workshop today is on what does being clean mean to me? And so for our first speaker, we have, what's your name?
She's gonna go first.
Okay, what's your name?
Ashley.
And we have Ashley. Welcome, Ashley, everybody.
Good afternoon, folks. My name is Ashley. I'm an addict.
Hi, Ashley.
Welcome, everyone, and thanks so much for coming today and to listen to me and everyone else. And thanks to the to Douglas for the invite. It's really great to be at a convention in another country. This is my third ever convention. The first one I was at was 10 years ago, and honestly, I ran out of the place. I was terrified. There were so many people. I was right in early recovery then. I wasn't able to listen for similarities. I heard all the differences and said, right, that's not for me. And the last one was back in November in Cork, in my hometown, and that was so different. I got some real identification. I really knew I was in the right place. And then Douglas came to Ireland, and he said that him and the squad were going to be here at this one, and said, would you like to come? And I said, yeah, why not? So here I am. So just at the outset to say, I'm absolutely terrified. I'm really nervous. I need to remember to breathe. But you know, I've learned through Narcotics Anonymous that I deserve my seat in the room, just like the rest of the people. My story can be different from a lot of other addicts, but that really doesn't matter. It's more about the thought processes, the negativity that goes on in my head, the behaviours, and that's where I find my identification, and that's how I know that I'm in the right place. I'm a recovering addict. My clean date is the 14th of April 2023, so I'm in early recovery. I was saying earlier to someone that I'm in early recovery again, but actually I've never really got out of early recovery. Last time around 10 years ago, I got some good clean time, but you know, I wasn't really fully practicing the whole program. I had lots of reservations, and ultimately I stopped going to meetings and went back out there. This time around, I'm trying to do it differently. And what does living clean mean to me? It means practicing the whole program, you know, following all the suggestions, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. But just to tell you guys a little bit about myself, I'm a middle-aged woman. I have three kids and I have three grandkids. I've been an active drug user all my life, but in binges. So, you know, cannabis was one of my drugs of choice, and it was the daily use. And then I binged on the hard drugs. I was a party girl, and, you know, drugs were wonderful at one stage until they stopped working. But I've been an addict. I believe I was probably born an addict. I spent lots of years trying to work out why, trying to analyze it. I'm a data analyst by trade, with an analytical mind, and I always wanted to know why. And I think maybe the difference now is that I don't really care about why anymore. You know, I've learned to surrender. I just am. I had all those behaviors right from an early age. Fantasy was probably my first obsession. You know, I just wanted to be out of my head. I wanted to be someone different. I used to dream about being someone different. Laura Ingalls. Do you remember, yes. Laura Ingalls? The Little House on the Prairie. So that was my first fantasy. I wanted to be running through the fields of wildflowers with Laura Ingalls. And I wanted to be a good girl, but I kept doing things that got me into trouble. So, you know, I was labelled as bold or bad was the thing that I kept in my head. lighting fires, smoking cigarettes, and then I found drugs at an early age, around 12. Someone was sharing yesterday or earlier today about that age, around 12. I think that's when lots of us get caught up in this disease. So yeah, alcohol was first, and then look, I went through every drug that was around. My circle, you know, some drugs weren't around, and I was probably lucky. The ones that you need to detox from weren't just, they just weren't available to me. I never came across them. And I was probably lucky there, you know, because who's to know? Those, not yet, they always do catch up with you, don't they? I was a teenage mom. My son was born when I was 18. And he has three kids now, so I'm grandmother to those three kids. They live in Australia on the West Coast. And one of the reasons I'm here, actually, is because they're coming to Ireland on holidays this year, so I don't have to go there. So I was able to use my holiday money to come here instead, which is great. I've got two daughters, which I had in my 40s, so they're teenagers now. The youngest will be 13 next week. And, you know, I want to bring up those girls through their teenage years with a mom who's present. And that's probably one of the main reasons why I'm back in recovery again and really trying to do something different this time. You know, I spoke earlier there about the similarities rather than the differences. You know, I'm just not questioning it anymore. I'm just not fighting it anymore. I'm just trying to do what everybody tells me to do, and not challenging it. Just make the next right decision. So how did I get here? In December 2023, following a long, slow relapse, I was hiding in my bedroom doing my drugs, and really I couldn't leave. My marriage was in tatters. I wasn't being a good mom to my daughters. I could get out of bed to drive them to school while under the influence, and I could cook them food and I could just about talk to them, but you know, I was barely existing. COVID had allowed a lot of us who work on computers to work from home, so although we were supposed to be back in the office, it was easy to say, "Oh, I'm working from home today," and I was getting away with, you know, being off my head, using sometimes during the day, but most of my using would have been at night until the very end, when it just took me over and I was using all the time. And I got to a stage then where, you know, I needed to do something different. So I reached out to a guy called Sean, who's a really good friend of mine who I've known a long, long time. He used to be married to my next door neighbour. I took him to his first meeting 10 years ago. And I sent him a text. I didn't phone him. I find it really difficult to phone people. That's one of the things that is suggested. You got to ring people. You got to ring three people every day. Yeah, I'm not quite there yet. I can do the text messages, but I'm trying on that one. So anyway, I sent Sean a text and said, "I need help." So, and, you know, he met me straight away. And I remember sitting with him in a hotel in my hometown saying, "I mean, are there really people out there who are enjoying life without drugs?" I had forgotten that this life is available. I really didn't think that, you know, there was anything out there for me. I was at the stage where dying was a good possibility. I knew I wasn't being a good mother, and my brain or my disease was beginning to tell me that my kids would have been better off without me. So Sean got me to a meeting. That was December 23. It took me a while to let go of the alcohol. I gave up the white powder then, but it took me a while to let go of the alcohol. And I'm 9 months and a couple of weeks clean now. So, yeah. Thanks so much. I mean, it really means the world to me, to be honest. Every day I can feel myself getting stronger. I do battle my disease and my mental health a lot, but I have the tools now to manage it. You know, my internal manageability, unmanageability, I wouldn't say it's in control, but I know what to do when it takes me over. And so, getting back to the question at the start, how am I living clean today, or what does living clean mean to me? It's practicing the program. You know, I'm 55 years of age, so There's been many times when I put down drugs, mostly through therapy, but not really for long periods of time, except for the last time 10 years ago when I was going to regular meetings. So now, what am I doing? And like the first thing that I'm doing is meetings. I do a Zoom meeting probably every morning at 7 a.m. Sometimes I fall asleep in it, but I do try and log on anyway. You know, I really make the effort. And if I fall asleep kind of 2 days in a row, I make sure the third day I get out of the bed and I turn on the camera and make that proper effort. And I try and share at least twice a week. Members then, I would say, is one of the really important things. You know, it's all about connection. I mean, I did drugs to get connection with people. Now I do Narcotics Anonymous to get connection with people. And in the last 9 months in particular, I've begun to reach out to people in my local area and some of the people that I know on the Zoom meetings. And you know, that's really wonderful because they think the same way as me. And I can talk to them in a much deeper way than I can with my own friends. And when I do that, I remember that life is worth living and I feel part of. Sponsor. So I had a sponsor during the summer. We had a bit of fallout. You know, we're both sick people. It didn't end well. But that's okay. I think one of the most important things that you learn in this program, that, you know, not everything is going to work out. So I took my time in getting another sponsor. And I do have another sponsor now since just before Christmas. And with that sponsor, I'm doing the steps. I'm writing step three at the moment. I was down the back there earlier writing a little bit more on one of the questions. I'm nearly at the end of it and I'm about to share step two with him. So, and that's all about getting a higher power. You know, I have accepted that I'm an addict, but the higher power has always been, or the God thing has always been, a bit of a challenge. I'm Irish, right? Most of us are Catholics. Most of us were brought up under strict Catholic rules, and you know, that caused me a lot of trouble in my life as a teenager when I was a wild child, breaking all the rules and then blaming God. So there's a struggle around that, but by doing the steps this time around and understanding what surrender is, and I think that's probably the biggest change in me, is just let it go. It doesn't matter. You know, you don't have to know exactly what it is. Just surrender. I do need some kind of a concept of higher power. And, you know, it's nature. It's the universe. It's the world out there. But most of all, it's the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. All us people coming together to help us stay clean, you know, to try and get us to live a healthy, happy life. And it's working for me. So far so good. step four will be the next one. You know, that's kind of going to be challenging. But I know, and I think what I'm learning is that it's not all about defects. You know, there's some of our assets as well that we need to look at. And I do know that I have some assets. In the last 9 months, I've really become to like myself again, I suppose, is a good way of putting it. Eventually, I'd like to be able to say that I love myself again, but, you know, it's a journey, and I'm on that at the moment. Water. Service, there you go. That's the next thing I wanted to talk about. When I was in the fellowship 10 years ago, my daughters were really young, and I found it difficult to do service. But this time around, I've really decided that in order to stay in the fellowship and, you know, really feel part of and not to forget, because I'm one of those forgetful addicts who I can get healthy and then think, oh, I'm fine. So I'm doing as much service as I can. I started by being a co-host on one of the Zoom meetings and the 7 a.m. Belfast Breakfast Club. Shout out to all those members. It's a great gang of people. And then I became secretary, so I'm still secretary on a Saturday morning. I probably won't do it tomorrow morning because it'll be 1 a.m. here. And hopefully someone is going to stand in for me. But it's, you know, it's really good to feel that you're giving back and also have that sense of responsibility. You know, I have to get out of bed. And on the Saturdays, there's no way that I'm lying in bed with the phone on, falling asleep, you know, and getting up and getting my coffee ready and putting on the camera. And it's a really good way to start the weekend. When I was in active addiction, Saturday mornings didn't happen, you know. I was either still partying from the night before or hiding under the covers. I've recently, at the last convention in November, I signed up for H&I, and I've just had my Garda vetting passed. Garda is police in Ireland. So once I get my year, one day at a time, I'll be able to go into the prisons. And in the ladies' prison in Limerick in Ireland, on the west coast of Ireland, there's no meeting at the moment because they don't have enough people doing service. So hopefully I'll be able to help out there. And I think there's three other girls who are just behind me. you know, and having that responsibility, I think it makes us feel good about ourselves, but it also says to us, or to me, in those times where I might feel like going, fuck it, you know, you can't fuck it, you've got this responsibility, you've got to go and run that meeting, you've got to go and do this. And, you know, if that's enough to stop me from using drugs again, then isn't that wonderful? So, yeah, so look, I think I've said enough now. I'm beginning to shake again. thank you so much for listening to me. It's been really good to be here.
And next, we'll have Jennifer.
Oh, thank you. Hey, short people problems. Didn't you say that earlier, Christine? Where are you at? Hi, my name is Jennifer, and I'm an addict. I also, I think Will said it in the last meeting, can suck up a lot of time talking about a lot of shit. So I'm going to pay attention to the time, but or do my best. I was just talking about like how I haven't thought about this like in terms of rehearsing. When I was new, and I remember the first time I was asked to speak, it was like I had a whole spiel set up, right? But like a lot of it wasn't even true. It just sounded good, right? And I don't want to live like that today, right? Like I could come up here and tell you, blow smoke up your ass and tell you how great everything is, and I could be dying on the inside, you know. And I've done that in Narcotics Anonymous, and I don't want to live like that anymore. And so, what does living clean mean to me? And this is like a broad topic that could go so many ways, you know. I could stand here and tell you about all the principles I practice, right? I could tell you how humble I am, which if you're really humble, you're not telling people how humble you are. You know what I mean? I could tell you, you know, my life story, right? And how I got to where I am today, you know. The first thing I want to say, and it's really important, it's tattooed on my wrist, like, today I have freedom from active addiction. And that's what living clean means to me. It doesn't mean that I don't suffer from manifestations of my disease, but it means I don't want to use today. And on days when I even consider the possibility of using, I don't. My friend Eric talked about it like it's a choice, right? Until I put something in my body that changes the way that I feel, you know, I have a choice. Once I make that choice, I don't have any choices left, right? I'm a slave. And I don't want to live like that anymore. And I haven't wanted to live like that for a really long time. You know, I walked into Narcotics Anonymous against my will at 17 years old because my parents didn't know what to do with me and they threw me in a treatment facility. And that's how I got here. 2 years prior to that, my dad took me to the other fellowship. And at 15, my dad already knew I had a big problem, you know. And he was in the other fellowship, and so that's what he knew, and that's what he did. And I sat in this room, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to live like any of these people at all. There's old ladies in the corner knitting. You know, there's this old guy pounding, you know, on the podium telling me, you know, how to stay sober. Like, no, that's not how I wanted to live, right? And all I heard was all the problems, and then I saw all of these people doing all these adult things at 15 years old, and I was like, I don't want to live like that. That doesn't even sound like fun, right? And so I roll into Narcotics Anonymous, and literally when I say roll, my parents' minivan threw me into a treatment lockdown treatment facility, and I was hogtied. This is my intervention. I was hogtied, threw in the back of the minivan in a town about an hour away from where the treatment center was, and I was dropped off at treatment, and like, we don't know what to do with her anymore, you know, and that's, so when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I wasn't brimming with hope or willingness. I didn't want to stay clean. I didn't want to be here, and I just wanted, I was 17, I wanted to turn 18 years old so nobody else could tell me what the fuck to do anymore. That was my goal. I'm 49 years old, and I've been clean since I left that treatment facility. Wow. So, I don't say that for applause by any means. What I'm saying is if you're here and you don't want to be clean, it's okay.
Absolutely.
If you don't have any hope that you can have anything different, it's okay. Right? If you don't want to be honest with anybody right now, okay, sit down and don't use and we'll figure the rest out later.
Yeah.
And that's what worked for me. I showed up here and I told you guys, you're not the boss of me. I don't have any desire to have anything that you have. Everything I saw was people losing kids, divorces, you know, the other people were working and had cars and, you know, like all the things I didn't have and I hadn't experienced. I hadn't experienced any adult things, although I thought I was grown. I thought I knew. You know, I'm running the streets at 15 and 16 and 17 years old. You know, I'm not going home. I'm living in a garage in the middle of winter. Like, I thought I was grown. I had zero idea what I was doing. But there was something here, right? Even though I couldn't identify or relate or whatever it was, whatever you guys were doing, you were living clean. I noticed. I just didn't know what it was. And all I saw was like the outside stuff, right? Like I grew up in a home where we don't talk about what's going on and we look good and we do all the right things. And I'm doing right in air quotes. You know what I mean? You show up, you get straight A's in school, you marry a good guy and you get the white picket fence and the two-car garage and all that shit, right? That's what was kind of beat into me growing up. But that was not what was going on in my house. Right? It was not what was going on in the house. Like, my mom kind of just was like, we do what we do. This is how we do it. We don't talk about what's going on. We don't say the things that are really happening, the dysfunction, you know. And, you know, my dad at the time was out. He was drunk. My mom was divorced. And there was guys in and out of the house. This new guy. Oh, this guy's going to be your dad. My mom's on her fifth marriage, you know. And if you're on your fifth marriage, it's not a judgment, but my mom drilled into me the entire time of my life that I had to have a man to be okay. And that's how I proceeded to live a lot of my life, you know. And having a man is great, but it doesn't make me okay. I learned that the hard way here, by the way, several times. And that's what it looked like for me, right? I got the good grades. I did the things. You know, all I really wanted to be was loved for who I was. And all I was told is that I wasn't good enough. My entire life. I couldn't do this because I wasn't good enough. I didn't get a good enough grade on that, so I couldn't have this. I did it. It was very, very conditional for me. And Narcotics Anonymous has taught me that love isn't conditional, right? I can love you and not be okay with some shit that went down and still love you. Right? I don't have to like wipe you out of my life, you know. You hurt my feelings. It doesn't change the way that I feel about you. You hurt my feelings. Okay, like that happens. That kind of shit happens here, right? But I came in these doors and I was inherently bad. There was nothing I could do that was right. And I was going to hell, so I was going big. We were going out with a bang, right? And when I right before, you know, when 16, I don't even know how old I was, like I was planning my funeral already. Like I knew the path that I was on. There is zero question in my life today that I'm an addict, you know, zero. And I had a lot of questions when I got here. I thought I was too young. I thought that I hadn't done enough. I thought I hadn't had the good parties. I hadn't done all the fun drugs, you know. I don't know what fun drugs are because it wasn't fun anymore. But and I started this dialogue, you know, about all the things. I hadn't gone to college, and I hadn't gone to a fraternity party. I couldn't fucking finish high school, and I'm worried about going to a fraternity party in college. You know, I mean, my thinking was so distorted when I got here that I couldn't imagine being clean and, like, all this, like, I'll call it bullshit. It was bullshit back then. It's not bullshit. Now all this like spiritual bullshit that you guys were spouting out, right? Like no addict like me that lived the life that I lived, that believed so little about myself. I was an object. You know what I mean? If I could give you me and you could give me high, we're down. Everything was transactional for me. There was no feelings or emotions or fucking, like, let's do this and get it done. Let's get high. Right? And that's at 15 and 16 and 17 years old. I did not walk in here like a whole human being, you know. I was a thing. I was a possession. I was an object, right? And that's how I lived in the beginning, you know, of my recovery, right? Well, he's going to fix me. I left treatment with a boyfriend, by the way. Didn't even know who he was, but my friend was hanging out with this guy, and she decided that I needed to be this other guy's girlfriend so that we could go hang out together after we got out of treatment. You can imagine how well that went, you know? And that was my path, you know? And so when we talk about living clean, like, I wasn't living clean, you know, when I got here. I wasn't living honestly. I wasn't using, right? And that's the first step. And I don't want to belittle the point of we don't get high no matter what, right? We talk about that commitment to stay clean. That's number one, right? And I did do that, right? I stayed clean, right? But at some point, that wasn't enough for me. Some point that isn't enough for addicts like us, right? I needed more. And when I say more, like I needed a spiritual awakening. I didn't know that at the time. You know, I needed to do some step works. I needed to stop chasing him, right? I needed to get some connection with some women. And I did not like the women. I still don't love women's meetings, and it's my own bullshit. It's my own bullshit. But I had to connect with some women that were going to help me, right? Because dudes weren't helping me. I mean, we were fucking and all that, but he wasn't helping me. That was not helping me, you know? And that's my truth, you know? And so these ladies, and I got, this is the best part of my best experience, because of everything that happened in this moment that I'm telling you about put me where I am today, you know, 32 years later. There's these women, they're blonde hair, they're blue eyed, they're in spandex. It's 1992, so let's remember that. Black spandex. We're going. You know, we have dances every weekend. We're going to like Denny's and all these coffee, you know, these places afterwards and eat. Not we, them. Let me say that. And just, I don't know what they saw. They saw something in me like she's really fucked up and we need to grab her up. And that's pretty much what it was. I was the girl with my knee shaking, and, you know, in the back of the room, outside every 15 minutes smoking a cigarette. I couldn't hear you. I couldn't sit still. I couldn't live in my own skin. You know, my head was noisy and I didn't know how to shut it up. And so they're like, you're with us. And I was like, I didn't know what that meant. Okay, we're going to a dance. Okay, let's go. Oh, you're going to wear this. Okay, let us do your hair. So this was funny. So they're all these beautiful blonde hair, blue eyed, you know, really skinny girls and whatever. And I'm, you know, I've got this wild ass hair when I get clean, and I don't know what to do with it. I mean, it's up today, but it's like, you know, it was just this big head of brown curly hair and these dark brown eyes, and I don't own any spandex because I went to treatment with a suitcase that my mom packed. I had nothing when I came here. You know, I had left it in all different places, and I had very little. You know, I was living, sleeping on a daybed in my 5-year-old sister's room when I got out of treatment. Like, that's where I was. And they're like, you're going to wear this, and we're going to go do this. And I'm like, and for the first time, I actually was like, okay, maybe this, they like me. You know, they really like me, you know. And they saw me. And this is the part of the story that's so important for me. They saw me. They saw this little girl who had no idea what she was doing. And I don't know how I managed to stay clean in the time that I did before I had this experience, other than I just fucking held on, right? And you know, three of those women are still around. You know, one of them's going to celebrate 40 years this year. Another one's still around. We still see each other. I still live in the same place I got clean in Sacramento, California. And they're still around, you know. And I have this handful of people that I have known for 32 years that I've been clean that are in my circle. And you don't get that on the streets at all, you know. And that, they taught me how, what living clean looks like, right? They were showing up for their life every day. They were practicing principles. They were doing, you know, the next right thing. they were showing up for me, this girl that couldn't even think highly enough of herself to think that you would want to include me in your life, right? And I still, man, I still today sometimes suffer with that same, like that shit is deep and embedded, right? And I have to fight it a lot, you know? But the fight's different today, right? Like I have a lot of tools today that I didn't have when I was new, you know? This is, you know, my journey in recovery, learning what living clean looks like, started when I said, okay, and I started hanging out. Okay, I'll go to this book study, right? And then I asked this lady, the one that's going to celebrate 40 years, her name's Ruth, asked her to be my sponsor. And she was like, I'm sorry, honey, I have a lot of sponsees like that. And I think what she was like, you're a fucking lot of work, and I don't have time. Listen, I'm a lot, and I know it, and I'm okay with it, you know? I wasn't okay with it back then. I can be a lot, but that's when she said, I have this book study at my house on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock, and we read the literature, and, you know, I'll see you there. It wasn't like an ask. It was like, I'll see you there. I was like, okay, and that was one of the very first times in recovery where when somebody said something to me, like, you need to do this, like, I didn't get told what to do and handle it well. I was like, okay, you know, I was desperate enough, I was miserable, I was in a stupid relationship with a stupid boy that I had no business being in, and everything was his fault, and I didn't have any accountability, and I was the victim, you know, I was the victim, and I learned very quickly that I was a participant, that I made choices, and nobody was keeping me there, you know, but in that book study is where I found my sponsor. And for the first time in my life, I was able to tell that sponsor everything. Every detail. Every dirty thing I did. Everybody I stole from. Every dude that I couldn't remember his name. My fourth step was like, dude in the dugout. You know what I mean? At the baseball field. You know? Like, I don't know. And my truth is that, you know, my first drug of choice was alcohol, and from the moment I put that to my lips, I blacked out, I threw up, and I had no idea what happened after that. Every time, you know, and then I found drugs that kept me awake, you know, so I didn't have bad things happen to me anymore. And so that's what my fourth step looked like for me in my head, right? There was a lot of other shit in there, but I was so focused on telling all of those dirty secrets, and nobody was ever going to love me or want me or think highly of me because of the person that I was when I was using. Nobody. This girl. I was a girl. I was a child, you know? And so she taught me by telling me one thing about her fourth step that was worse than something that I did that I heard her say, and I was like, that's my sponsor right there, because nothing that I say to her will surprise her, and I needed that. I needed somebody to say, it's okay, honey. I did that too. I was there too, you know, and she was young when she got clean, and I worked my first 12 with her, and what living clean went from the moment that I made a decision to defer to another human being in Narcotics Anonymous on how I'm going to work steps and learn how to live life on life's terms clean, my whole world opened up, you know? I had got that freedom. I got that freedom. I no longer was chained to the idea that I was going to die a using addict, that I was going to be that girl that nobody wanted to be around, you know, that nobody was ever going to love me, that I wasn't enough, you know? And that's still a long learning lesson. I'm still learning a lot of that today. And what happened when I worked the first 12, I started to understand what the hell you guys were talking about in meetings when I couldn't relate, you know? And all of that stuff, and it all started to like click and make sense, you know? And I didn't want a higher power. I didn't want to be honest. I wasn't open-minded or willing to do a whole lot in the beginning, you know, until I started seeing some, like, the evidence, right? We talk about the evidence, the things that were happening in my life. And they were simple for me, right? Like, I got a job at a grocery store, right? And then I got a job at a grocery store, and they paid me. And instead of getting high, I went and bought a car, right? Like, the little tiny, a car that was mine, that had an ignition that worked, not a toggle switch, that had insurance. that had brakes. I had a car that didn't have brakes when I was high. We used the e-brake. It was fun. I mean, I thought it was fun. I should be dead, really. But it was the little things. You know, I got a bank account. And then I had to pay bills. You have to understand, I was young. I didn't know how to do, and you guys taught me how to do that, you know? And that's part of, like, what does living clean mean to me? I defer to you. I don't know how to write a check. Can you show me how? We wrote checks back then. If you don't know what they are, it's okay. You know, I don't know how to go to the post office and buy a stamp and put a stamp on it and mail it. I don't know how to call and turn on the electricity in an apartment that I just rented, you know? I don't know. All of that I learned here, right? Life on life's terms. How do I be a grown up? How do I be a grown up? I don't feel like a grown up all the time, but how do I be a grown up or do the things that like normal people do, right? Because it seems easy for them. I don't know if it is, but it seemed easy for them, and it seemed easy for my parents when I was growing up, you know? And all of those things started to click into the, you know, oh, if I practice the principle of honesty and I tell somebody my truth, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have to cover it up with 8 lies because I forgot what I told you the last time. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. And all of the principles. And, you know, I worked the 12 steps with the sponsor that I have that I could tell anything to. And she was loving and kind. And she was exactly what I needed at exactly the right time to keep me here. You know, sponsorship, they talk about it being the heartbeat of a fellowship, is fucking real, right? You know, and after I worked the first 12 with her, I found this other sponsor, and she's a teacher. She's nothing like me. She's a teacher. She's the age of my mother. She never had any kids. You know, she got clean when she was 40. And there was just something that drew her to me. I was at a meeting and she was speaking, and she gets up and she says, "My name's Mitzi and I'm an addict. And I'm so grateful that I got to speak tonight because I love to hear myself talk." I was like, she's it. She's my sponsor. She's still my sponsor today. And she's been my sponsor for 29 years. And she's the best sponsor for me, and it works for me. And 29 years seems like a long time, and it seems like a blip on the radar when I think about her, our relationship, you know, and all of those outside differences have no bearing on our relationship, you know. But she was, because she was a teacher, I said that to say she wrote down the principles of the 12 steps on a piece of binder paper in different color markers. And they're all a different color. And I still have that today. And it is beat to shit. But it's whatever step work I'm working in, I put it in there, right? You know, and that's how I practice living clean today, right? Am I being kind today, right? Have I, my 10 step has turned into this. And I learned this from somebody else. Actually, Charles knows Tina. And this, I was at a camp out over the summer. And she's like, my 10 step is, have I given more than I've taken today? That's practicing living clean. Right? That's what living clean means to me today. Pops up on my phone every night at 9 o'clock. And often I just swipe it away because I'm busy, you know, because I'm so busy that I can't read it. But often I will look at it and really, like, think about it, right? Take a moment to pause, you know. But this sponsor that I have today walked me through these steps, and we started talking about principles, and we started talking about things that were important. You know, there's these things that are important in Narcotics Anonymous that I do, right? There's this, everybody has their recipe of what works for them. Some people do H&I, some people love secretary meetings, you know, some people, you know, sponsor, you know, whoever or whatever, how many people, then they do this and that. But like, you know, my recipe is different than anybody else's, but I'll tell you what, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, we only had the basic text and the Just for Today meditation had come out, right? So we didn't have a lot of literature, right? So we did a lot of other stuff, you know, Hazelton and all this other shit, because we didn't have it, right? So my sponsor had me like in all of these other weird ass books. They were all step related, right? But it was like, what's next, you know? And I actually lost my train of thought of where I was going with this, but that's not uncommon. But the principles that she was talking about were always something that would go with those steps, right? It was always one of those things. And to kind of get back to like this, what does living clean mean to me? Like, it means something. When I got clean, when I came here, when I was new, like, living clean was, I'm not using, right? That was living clean to me, you know? And as time has gone on, it has really turned into, you know, not only like practicing some things around here and staying in tune with the fellowship, but like this giving back thing has become more important and more important, right? The less of me, more of you, you know. I probably said that backwards, but whatever. You know, and it's been like I feel like 32 years is a long time to cram in a short, you know, speech. And so I'm trying to like tell you like the really important parts. You know, when I came here, all I wanted was the white picket fence, right? That model that my mom had for me, right? Like, I want you to marry a lawyer, and I want you, or a doctor. You know what I mean? Like, all those things, right? Ain't no doctor marrying this girl, but, you know. And I did, and I tried to attain those things, right? I tried to attain those outside things. And I did. I mean, I met my ex-husband. He's my only ex-husband, my ex-husband, at 19. And we got married when I was 22. I had my first kid when I was 23. And my second one at 28, and my third one at 31. And on the outside, it looked great. You know, I grew up here. I literally grew up in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I mean, in the totality of my life, if you think about it, I did my teens here, my 20s, my 30s. I'm 49. I'm going to be 50 this year, so I'm getting ready to start my fifth decade in Narcotics Anonymous. That's a fucking trip, right? Like, I didn't think I was going to live to be 18, really. You know, but I attempted to attain those things that I thought that I was brought up with. You know, the white picket fence I didn't get, you know what I mean? Like, I got the husband and I got the kids, but what I got was compromising who I was to keep that stuff. That's not living clean, you know. Almost 4 years ago, I was considering whether or not I wanted to be on this earth anymore because I couldn't stand the life that I created, right? It's not his fault. I mean, he has a part, but I'll let him deal with that on his end. You know what I mean? But I was miserable because I thought that if I attained those things and I look good on the outside, that you guys would love me, right? God forbid you love me for like going through some shit and having some life stuff go on, right? And I got stuck in this box in Narcotics Anonymous where I thought I had to do X, Y, and Z to be the, we don't, you know, they always talk about like there's no model for the recovering addict, but I thought I wanted to be. Like, I could make that happen, right? It didn't work for me. And I wasn't living a life built on spiritual principles and spirituality and God. God wasn't involved in that process, right? Jennifer, if I can fix, manage, and control you to fit my narrative, that was what I wanted, right? And it all came crashing down. And not like... Well, I mean, literally crashed, you know, I burned it, you know, I burned a lot of it up in, you know, I don't want to say it that way. I kind of backed out of my marriage and kind of went on this like journey of self-discovery, but I kind of forgot about like my kids. You know what I mean? Like I had these kids and I mean, they were older, but what happened was is I needed to disappear to reinvent myself in Narcotics Anonymous. And that looked different. But in the way that I handled myself at the time, I was not always on the up and up with what I needed to be doing, right? It was easy to, like, disassociate from, you know, I took a step back and I was only going to my home group because I didn't want to, my ex-husband and I live in the same area. We went to, you know, we know all the same people, right? Like, I was married for 24 years. And when, you know, there's big breakups and, you know, couples that have been together for a long time in NA, it's like, ooh, you know what I mean? Like, it's the talk for a minute. It's the tea, whatever you want to call it. And so I got scared, right? Because I got scared because all of a sudden I wasn't a wife anymore. And I had these kids that I was taking care of. And I wasn't all the things that I had built myself up to be, right? Because I wanted you to love and accept me and think that I was doing a really great job. And I have to tell you, like, I say all of that to turn it into, when I talk about what living clean looks like, it took some time and it's taken a lot of hard work, but I fucking picked myself up from that. And I reinvented myself here because of you guys, right? I have ride or die friends that I've, through this whole process of changing me, like I'm at this convention with the, you know, 11 people that I've connected with all over the U.S. that we make an effort once a year to come see each other, and this is where we're doing it this year, you know? And I wouldn't have had any of that had I not made that change, right? I wouldn't have had the life that I have today, you know, if I hadn't taken a step back and said, and really what I did was like, okay, God, I don't know. I don't know what I'm fucking doing anymore. And that is probably the best thing I could ever do for myself. I'm gonna let you do this, right? Because clearly what I'm doing isn't working, right? And so I got back to that part of I have to work on, what, Barb, I work on me and you get better, right? Not everybody's an asshole. Usually it's me that's the asshole, right? And I had to work out of that, you know, and the beautiful part about this program is there isn't, you know, like, I'm committed to stay clean. I'm committed to working the steps. I'm committed to working with others. I'm committed to being of service to this fellowship. I'm committed to a higher power that I don't even understand. And my understanding has been, and I stole this from a speaker, unnecessary for the majority of my growth. Right? I don't have to define God. I don't have to, it doesn't have to be up here. It doesn't have to be down here. It doesn't have to be over here. It can be wherever it is. You know, and that's how my higher power works for me. And I can go anywhere today, and I couldn't do this before, and find God. And I call it God just for the ease of the word, and it's simple. You know, you call whatever you want. It doesn't matter to me. But I finally said, okay, I don't know. And listen, I've been living the last almost 4 years a life beyond my wildest dreams. And not in any way or fashion that I ever imagined for myself. When I step out of the way and I participate in the recovery process fully, I get to enjoy living clean. I do. And I am not... I used to say I'm not the poster child for Narcotics Anonymous because when I got here, I was a fucking mess and I didn't do anything you guys told me. I still have a little bit of you're not the boss of me kind of attitude sometimes, and I'm a little stubborn and rebellious. But a lot of that stubbornness and rebelliousness today, channeled in the right way, works out well for me. And I don't push God out of the way, right? You know, and I have been... You know, one of the things that I've really learned around here is that it doesn't matter if I'm in bed, you know, sobbing, can't shut my head up, you know, don't know where to go, don't know who to talk to, don't know what to do, miserable. Like, I know I don't have to get high today, right? And I've even learned here that I don't have to use anything else. You know, I don't have to use him. I don't have to go visit Ben and Jerry. You know what I mean? I don't have to go on Amazon. I don't have, you know, and that's the thing. And the best part about my life today is it is not fucking perfect. I tried so hard to be perfect in Narcotics Anonymous, and I failed every single time. And today, I am... It depends on the day. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'm a hot mess, you know? Sometimes I'm like, yes, this day is going to be great. And some days I just show up, right? And I'm honest and I'm real about who I am, where I am, what I got going on. You know, my truth is I am a newly mother of adult children, and they're fucking assholes because they still live with me and they don't do what I want. You know, who knows what I'm going to come home to, you know, when I get home on Monday. I also don't, and it's not perfect. Nobody's perfect. That's the piece that has been freeing for me recently, right? My financial situation, it's not perfect. It's not great. It's not terrible. Sometimes it's better than others, you know. But I have managed to build a life here that is worth not being perfect. And that's what was drilled in my head to me my entire life. Even now. Like when I got divorced, I told my mom I was getting divorced. She's like, I told you so. I'm like, what, 27 later, years later, you're going to say I told you so? Like, that's, you know what I mean? It was like, that's kind of like how I grew up. It was like, well, I told you if you, you know what I mean? You have to do this and you have to do it my way or it won't work out, you know? And I was like, whatever. Like, I just made me laugh because I knew she was going to say it when I told her. And that's the thing, right? So all the things that happen in my life, I'm not perfect. I'm real. If I'm having a bad day, you ask me how I am today and I'm not having a bad day, I'm going to say, I'm not that great today. You know, I used to be, I'm fine or I'm good or everything's great or I'm blessed, which I am blessed, but I don't always feel blessed, right? So I can walk through here. I can do all the ugly, yucky stuff that we do, that we all participate in sometimes, and most of it is my own bullshit, right? I can hurt my feelings faster than anybody else can hurt my feelings, you know? And yeah, I got you. I do not show up in a way today that gives not only me but you a false sense of who I am, because that doesn't serve me or the fellowship or the women that I work with today in any way, shape, or form, right? And I think as addicts, I mean, I know me, but I think as addicts in general, like, we want to be who you want us to be because we want to be with you, or we want to do what you want to do, or we want to look like you, or we want to talk like you. And I'm like, I'm just Jennifer, right? And some days, I don't have my shit together. A lot of days, I'm fucking loony, right? Like, I'm, you know, like, I'm pretty sure, like, I always tell myself when I come home from being gone for whatever reason, I'll be like, all right, I always ask my kids, I just want the house left in the state that I left. You know, I want it back to the state I left it in. 95% of the time that doesn't happen. So you know what happens? I told him this last time. I'm charging him a cleaning fee the next time. For real. I'm like, and I'll start racking that shit up too, you know? And so instead of like losing my mind and going apeshit crazy, like, oh, well, let me create some sort of like boundary or rule or consequence or whatever you want to call it. And they laughed at me, of course, and I didn't react either. And I said, well, if you think I'm kidding, I'm not, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But I get to live freely today. I'm not chained to the idea that I'm going to have to use to feel better. I'm not chained to the idea that I have to do X, Y, and Z to be okay, right? I'm just here doing the best that I can every day, just like every other addict that, you know, wants freedom. So with that, thank you.
Very well spoken. Hey, let's close with the serenity prayer. We'll start you up.